Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It is that constant struggle, which is why it's a good topic for a podcast, as people are trying to kind of fund their passions, you know, whether you've got do something you're not really into to fund the film that you want to make, or you've got to, like, you go away and you shoot an advert and then that gives you some money to shoot your short film or something. Like, loads of creative people are just trying to strike that balance of, like, making things that they really feel passionate about and doing things which gives them money. But if those two things can collide, I think that's, like, the perfect world.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Balancing Acts. In this conversation, I talk with writer and director Craig Ainslie. Perfect. Hi, this is Steve Whiteley, comedian, actor, filmmaker and writer, all-round ADHD creative. And welcome to my new podcast, Balancing Acts, where I talk to an array of creatives ranging from comedians, actors, directors, all sorts. And we talk about how they find a sense of balance or not between their creative lives and their everyday lives, and how that has an impact on their mental health and beyond. Balancing Acts is now made in association with The Comedy Crowd, who are a website and community that support independent comedy creators such as myself. I have a Comedy Crowd short, which is a 2-minute video, one of my characters on their website. They showcase the best new videos on Comedy Crowd TV, which is comedycrowdtv.com, and across media platforms, so do go and check them out. Craig is a writer and director. His debut short film, Leslie, was a Vimeo staff pick and selected for numerous BAFTA and Oscar qualifying short films. His second short film, Whenever You're Ready, was also a Vimeo staff pick and was also selected on Nowness Short of the Week. And again, numerous BAFTA and Oscar qualifying film festivals, short film festivals. His animated short, The 12 Days of Christmas, featured none other than Phoebe Waller-Bridge. He's also written for Radio 4 and Have I Got News For You. Craig and I met at Palm Springs Short Fest and immediately hit it off, and have stayed buddies since. And I've wanted to get him on the podcast for a while and managed to corner him when he was in his shed. So this is another Zoom conversation. So you'll see, obviously, there's a little bit of audio ambience that, I guess, signifies whatever the audio would sound like when someone's speaking from a shed. But that aside, this is not even that aside. This is a really great conversation, and Craig covers loads of ground in terms of talking about different aspects of writing and directing, such as the challenge in deciding which projects that you're developing have priority. You know, until something gets green lit or gets options, which are the ones that you're going to prioritize. He talks about his life as a creative director in the advertising industry, which allows him to then finance his writing and directing scripted comedy projects. We discuss why it's important to make mistakes in your early projects and be shit for a bit, really, before you can get better. Craig breaks down his experience of making his debut short film, Leslie, which, as I said, won a Vimeo staff pick and really helped him understand about the short film festival ecosystem and trying to navigate between the good and the bad festivals.
He discusses the experience and learning curve of watching your short on the big screen and why Vimeo feels more like a short filmmaker's community than YouTube. Craig explains why it's important to make your short achievable to shoot and how he managed to get a production company on board. And also why you should, you know, approach production companies rather than waiting for them to come to you, because Craig reached out to production company. Granted, he had a relationship there, but it was his debut short, and they could well turn him down, but they decided to come on board. So he talks about that and why really like making shorts leads to more opportunities and sort of changes the conversations you have with industry execs, because rather than just showing them a script, you've got something on screen which they can look at, and you know, it helps people digest your style and all sorts. I mean, I don't need to explain this to you. You know this. We talk about imposter syndrome and Craig's approach to working with actors. He talks about the sitcom pilots he's currently got in development with various TV production companies and the challenges that you're faced with when you transition from turning your short into potentially 6 30-minute episodes. He breaks down the signs to look out for when you might have stumbled across a good idea, and he explains how he got a sitcom commission with Steve Coogan's Baby Cow, how to get right that precarious balance between earning money to fund your passion projects, the experience of working with Phoebe Waller-Bridge, and Craig also highlights his relationship with his editor who he's worked with on every project, and why he sends him his storyboard prior to shooting. We talk about Craig's transition of becoming a dad and the positive impact it's had on his productivity as a writer and on multitasking in general, and how parenting has opened him to new ways of thinking. There is loads here. This is a really great one if you're a writer, director, aspiring writer, director, with a, you know, with a comedy focus, then this is a really good episode. I got a lot of time for Craig. He's very talented and lovely dude, and I think you're going to enjoy it. So over to Craig. Perfect. Where are you in York? You're in Yorkshire?
No, I'm in the northeast.
Why are you in Yorkshire?
Outside Middlesbrough, in a tiny village that my parents live in. And I've sequestered myself in a, they've got a little kind of shed summer house thing at the bottom of the garden. And that's where I am right now. And my daughter naps in the middle of the day for about 2 hours, maybe 2.5 hours. And that's a window of time to like do some stuff.
So is this the window now?
I'm in the window. Great. Delicious.
Got you in the window. Well, thanks for doing this, man.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure.
It's a lovely place to hang out.
Yeah, is that what you, are you going to be doing your writing in the shed?
Yeah.
Is it like a converted office type thing?
No, it's a little summer house that my parents built at the bottom of the garden that they use for like in the summertime. So it's quite cold, but I'm just sat in here using data from my phone to use the internet. I just came off one call with my friend Rachel, who I'm writing something with. Like a Skype, trying to write a script over Skype together, and then straight into this.
Great. So have you got lots of stuff that you're working on project wise at the moment?
Yeah, there's a couple of things. I feel like there's always things, and it's like trying to decide which ones have priority.
That's the toughest thing, isn't it? I mean, until you get to a certain point where you've got a commission or you've been paid a bit of money to develop something. As an option or something like that, then it's like, which is prioritizing which projects to focus on?
That's exactly it. It's like I might have, I suppose they're all passion projects really, but I might have something I really want to work on. But as soon as something is money, I'm like, well, they're now at the top of the priority list.
Yeah.
But sure. They were once just projects with no money behind them that I was working on, I guess. So I'm editing something that I shot just before the virus took over everything.
Yeah,
you could film things, and then I have a script commission that I have to write. I don't know how long.
You don't know what?
I don't know how long I've got to write it at the minute.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you probably have a bit of time now, with all things considering.
It's just a bit of everyone's just kind of slowed down a touch.
Yeah. Well, like, pretty, from what I understand, all productions have been cancelled now. So,
yeah.
It's a good time to develop.
My agent said it's a good, no one's putting money into production, so they're putting it in. They've got to do something, so they're putting it into development. So it's a good time.
Yeah, that's what I heard as well. The other thing that I was told was to start, I mean, this is an obvious thing, start thinking about formats that could work for being shot in Talent's Home.
That makes sense. That's mainly what I'm seeing online. What I'm learning during this, there's a lot of bored celebrities at home looking for an outlet.
Yeah, there's that. And there's also, well, the broadcaster's schedules are going to dry up very soon. So they're going to need loads of new shows and they're all going to be shot from home.
What's going to, like,
shows, I got asked, like... I got asked by a production company. Literally, I had a conversation with them on Monday. They're like, yeah, can you start coming up with format ideas that talent can shoot from home?
Shoot from home. They just need it quickly because they're running out of episodes of, like, must be, yeah.
Like Channel 4 just did a press release on all the sort of new types of isolation content that they're going to be creating.
Have they?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because who knows how long it's going to last. So we're going to run out episodes of things like EastEnders and Coronation Street, which I guess they just film every week. Would it be funny if that suddenly turned to animation? EastEnders goes animated for the summer.
That's a great idea. You should pitch that. That's such a good idea. In fact, you could just do that for all the shows, couldn't you? The Bill.
Everything goes animated, yeah.
Is The Bill still going? It's not going, is it? Is that?
I don't know.
No, I don't know either.
Yeah. There's something like The Bill and Casualty, for me, just exist as like they'll permanently be on. But I don't know. They might have finished already. No idea.
No, yeah. I don't really plug into TV. I don't plug into like regular TV shows in that way, because obviously now like our viewing habits are so fragmented because we can go and watch on demand and streaming, etc. Yeah. There isn't necessity to do it. Although I fell out, I've stopped watching EastEnders and all a long time ago. But now I'll start if it goes back into the animation.
I'm gonna tune right back in if we get the animated EastEnders.
Yeah.
But I'm the same. I don't have in my house in London, I don't have an aerial to make like live TV stream through my TV. So I just have like streaming platforms, Netflix and stuff. But at my parents at the minute, they watch terrestrial TV. So it's on. And like, you realize that I still hear the theme tune for Coronation Street playing and stuff. But there's something nice about when the TV's on, because it feels like a thing that everyone is watching around the country. So you feel kind of connected to outside a little bit, especially when everyone's locked inside like now.
Yeah, it's those water cooler moments. Like, we still have them now, but it was more for, you know, maybe the last episode of Sopranos, or, you know, Breaking Bad and those kind of moments. But now I feel like we're saturated. It's not saturated, but we're like flooded with so many good TV shows that you can be watching. Someone could be watching Ozark and another person Game of Thrones, and those people haven't watched the other show. So there's so many that I still haven't seen.
Isn't my to watch list is intimidating? I don't know. I'll never get through. I'll die before I get to watch everything that everyone recommends me. But I think maybe now's a good time to catch up,
because it's a great time.
No one's making anything new. You might be able to get up to speed.
This is true. So just to sort of like set things up, you started off in the ad industry doing as a creative director.
Yeah. And I still do that part.
You still do that now. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so essentially you're sort of working on ad campaigns. Is it mostly TV commercials, or is it across the board?
A lot of TV commercials and across the board, yeah. So I'm like a creative director at an agency called Mother in London. And I have a nice setup with them where I work part-time, and then I can like disappear for a spell if I'm shooting something or if I'm developing something, and then come back in it kind of gives me a consistent source of income. I have a family. I got to like get that prioritized first, and then everything else on top of it is in my outside advertising time.
And then as a writer-director, were you writing and directing your own work prior to getting into advertising, or was that something that you developed as time went on?
I think I was trying to, and then like years ago I made shorts and things like that, which didn't really go anywhere, and they just existed on my desktop and stuff. And then
why is that? Is that because you just knew that they weren't a certain standard to release into the internet? Or was this prior, like YouTube days, were you just literally mucking around and just experimenting?
Yeah, it was probably a little bit prior then going into it. But I just don't think it was good. I don't think I thought, yes, the world needs to see this. It was more just me trying to write scripts and trying to film them with friends and making stuff and then not putting it out.
See, that's but sensible. Kind of, that's sensible. I did the opposite. I made a sketch series with a friend of mine, and we put it out, and we should not have put it out. I mean, it was shite. And you know what? We were so deluded. We even pitched it as a sketch series, and somehow we blagged ourselves for a meeting with Lion TV.
Right.
And I think the feedback was something along the lines of sort of, this is like a GCSE art project standard.
Right. You kind of have to go through that though, don't you? Like,
devastating, yeah.
Humiliating, but it's funny, but then it helps you realize quicker. You're like, oh, yes. Okay, someone's giving some negative feedback now, right? I mean, it's going to be helpful eventually. It'll help you get better. You've got to be shit for a bit.
Yeah, for sure. So what was Leslie, your short film, was that the first piece of work that you put out onto the internet? Or that was just made available for people to view?
Yes, so that one. So I've been working in advertising for a while, and when you're creative in advertising, it's a lot of the same thing. It's like creative problem solving. You're writing scripts, but they're usually only like a minute long. And then on the side, I wrote and shot Leslie, which was my first like live action short film, and that was the first time I put something out, and that was I don't know, only a few years ago. I don't know, 2015. Can't remember. Okay. And so that was the first time I made something like when I put it out, and it got like a good enough response for me to be like, oh, okay, yeah, I want to do more of it. And then I got money to make a new one, so that the people that saw it would pay to make it for me to do another one.
Yeah, which is pretty amazing for your first proper short film, because it also got a Vimeo staff pick, didn't it? And it was selected for BAFTA qualifying short film festivals.
Yeah, so it was my first time venturing into the world of film festivals. And you learn quite quickly, there's just shitloads of festivals, and you kind of try and be selective over which ones are kind of worth going to or got the good credentials. Or it's usually you get there and if the other films playing in the program are really good as well, it's like, oh, this is a good festival. Whereas I remember going to one where like this, it was such a mad program where I think before my film, there was like a half an hour kind of experimental Czechoslovakian like documentary. And then my comedy short played straight afterwards. And I was like, oh, cause this film festival is a bit nuts. Maybe some of the others are better. But anyway, yeah. So it played at, some good festivals. It got a Vimeo staff pick, which is really nice because it means Vimeo pumping out to a lot more people get to see it, I guess. And then why Vimeo is such a lovely community for short films, because people get in touch if they like it, and the comments under a Vimeo film are like, oh wow, great performance, or what lens did you use?
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas like on YouTube, the comments just turn into an argument about Hitler within like three comments or something. And then people on Vimeo reach out to you, whether it's like a composer, it's like, oh, if you're doing a film in the future, I'd love to kind of work with you, or actors send you their show reels and stuff. And so with Leslie, I felt like I was moving into like the short filmmaking community.
So did you meet a lot of people off the back of the festivals and through Vimeo, fellow filmmakers and writers? Yeah. Did you? Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly that. Yeah. So they're just really supportive of the short filmmaking community. And then you see other short films that you like, and you see, and you realize there's just all these great actors out there who are screaming out for parts, and they will do short films if the script is good enough, and it kind of opens possibilities up to you.
Yeah.
And so I very much wrote Leslie to be, oh, that's it. Sorry, I'm going back in time here now, but I tried to make shorts for a while, and I'd always written them to be too big, too much money, too many locations, too many cast, too many actors. And like, how do I pull this off? How do I get enough money to make this? So then I set myself the brief of like, I need to write an achievable short film. And so Leslie is like one man alone in a forest on a phone. And I was like, okay, I know that this is achievable. And then I just sent it to Arnab, who I thought could play the part, and he wanted to do it. So then suddenly I had a script and talent on board, and then I took it to Blink Productions. I was like, I'm looking to make this. I need a producer to help me out. And they, I think because they saw that, they liked the script, but they saw that like, oh, we can make this. This is an achievable film. And so they helped me out.
Did you know those guys before, or did you just sort of literally just reach out to them?
So that was a key, that's where the advertising thing comes in. When I'm always like shooting adverts with production companies, so I get to meet all of the producers from these production companies and make friends with them. And then when I wanted to do something longer, I just got in touch with those guys just for help and advice, and that's how it worked.
Perfect. That's often the way, isn't it? Like, it can be super useful if you are working in a career like advertising and you're an aspiring writer, director, you're just meeting people along the way. And then when you're ready, you're like, I've done a short. Come on, sort me out now.
I think that's it. Yeah. I don't know. You've just got to kind of meet these people and then just ask.
Yeah.
So thing, can you help me out with it? I mean, it takes a lot of like energy and motivation, of course, but so does anything.
Yeah. And so then, and then you did, so then your next short was Wherever You're Ready.
That was my next like live action short. Yeah.
You did the animation in between.
I did a couple of animations in between that were really helpful as well. I'd never directed animations before. But again, that was the thing of making an animation, putting it out online. I did three of them. I did a trilogy of Christmas animations that the company I was working for paid me to do every year. And they all got staff picked and got shared around and on the internet and stuff. And so that helped with like just more connections and people kind of supporting you enough to be like, okay, yeah, we'll give you some money to go away and make a new short. It just gives you a bit of a foundation.
Was this,
you still always feel like you're gonna fuck it up if someone goes like, well, we'll fund your new thing.
Well, it's that imposter syndrome, isn't it? It's like, I don't know about you, but like, I always have that creeping in the back of my mind.
Yeah, I think it'd be weird if I didn't.
Yeah,
but oh, this is gonna be great. I always feel like, animation's different because it's so long and it happens just at people's computers, slowly drawing things, animating things. But when you're on set and everyone's gathered there for something you've written and the actors are doing your lines, I feel really responsible for everyone's happiness on set. And I'm like, God, they've just come out for the day. Probably a reduced rate because it's a short film, and are they just watching these scenes going like, what the fuck are we doing here? Yeah, like, yeah. All through my head.
I mean, that's like a very like nice, compassionate
approach, I think.
Yeah. And do you have, like, do you, what's your approach with like direct, with actors, sorry, to like, do you do warm up exercise with them or anything like that? Or how do you go about like making them feel as comfortable as possible, I guess?
Well, I mean, you would know because you were in something.
I was thinking that as I said it.
with your thing, we're talking about an abstract thing here, but Steve is in a pilot I shot a couple of weeks ago. And with yours, it fits so easily, that role. And I'd obviously seen your films before, and I'd seen you play a boyfriend in Swiped and something else of yours, where I was just like, oh, I know Steve can do this. And then we met up and talked about it. And I think just by talking about it, you kind of get on the same page. And then my thing is never to, I just want your version of it, really. Like, it's just like, has the actor got any questions? And by that point, if you've cast someone, you're looking for them just to do their version of what you've done. So with all the shorts I've done, I'll always just either meet the actor for a chat beforehand, or if it's like, if it's a longer part, then with my second short, which is called Whenever You're Ready, which has Rachel Stubbings is the lead character in that, and she has a really long monologue to do. I just did read-throughs with her and Kate, the other actress, that I just filmed. So I just set my phone up and I just shoot 2 or 3 read-throughs, and then make little adjustments based on whatever performance they give in each one. And then they'll always ad lib a line, or there'll always be something they say which is better than what I've written, or they say it in their voice. They say what I've written, how they would say it, which suits them more. So then I go back to the script and I put that in the script, and I give everyone an updated version of the script. Like, I remember even in the one that you did for me, you just added the word panna cotta, which wasn't in there. I was like, yes, it needed that element to it. It needed someone to say panna cotta at that moment. So that's how I work. I just work with talented people, and then they'll make you look good, I think.
That's a humble way of saying it. But I mean, 2 Vimeo staff picks in a row, mate. That's talent right there. Yeah. Don't deny yourself. Because, Whenever You're Ready, also got Vimeo staff pick. And that's not easy to get. Obviously, it's not like you don't make a short film going, right, I want to get a Vimeo staff pick. You know, they've got thousands and thousands of films that they're looking through, aren't they? So to get that is amazing. And then obviously that's how we met, because it did really well on the short film circuit and got accepted into Palm Springs Short Fest, which was basically a summer camp for filmmakers, which was a right laugh.
Yeah, that's an incredible festival. I'm guessing it's not on this year. I was thinking about it the other day.
Yeah, so many festivals. Oh man, like, it really sucks, doesn't it? If you think about the people that were in, had got into South by Southwest, and you know, all these festivals, tough.
Yeah, that is really sucks, because after all the hard work of putting it together, and you're really looking forward. I mean, South by Southwest would be amazing to have your film played and go there and be part of it. As Palm Springs was, because I was thinking this year, I haven't got anything ready to submit, and I'd like to again. But against that point earlier, like, the good film festivals are amazing. Once you're there and your film showing, and there's just so many talented people, it's kind of I find it like intimidating and inspiring at the same time, because there's so many great films that you're like, oh my god, yeah, I've got to do something good. And then it makes it feel achievable again. It's like, oh, these people have made a great film, maybe I can.
Yeah, I remember when they announced the winner. I remember seeing the winning short from Palm Springs, and the guy that directed it was like 21 or something. You're just like, wow.
Was it German one?
German one, yeah.
Yeah, it was really good. Yeah,
it was like beautifully shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the only time I'm like, God, he's so fucking young.
That's the thing with film festivals. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of young people there making great stuff.
But like you said, it's inspiring. It is inspiring. But I've talked
to... I remember with him particularly, he seemed so young that I was like, if I'd have made a film at his age, it would be so awful. Well, I did. It was awful.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, same with me and with my sketch show. Like, I do think there is definitely, I've talked about this before on the podcast, like, I definitely think there's a benefit to starting later, just in terms of, like, you know, you're more maybe emotionally developed and you've had, like, life experiences which are going to inform your writing.
Yeah, it's obviously some people make great stuff young, but it's definitely true for me. Like, had I have been doing this like in my early 20s, then I don't think it would have been any good.
Yeah, I guess it varies, doesn't it? But some people are just sort of like ridiculously emotionally mature from a young age. It's not even emotionally mature, but just, I don't know what it is. They're just ready. They sort of pop out ready.
They pop out. They've got all of their taste is so like highly attuned that they can tell if their work's going to be good.
Yeah.
But I didn't have that at that age. I don't know what it is.
So you're currently developing three projects with different production companies. Are they all sitcom projects?
Yeah, they're all comedy projects. Yeah. Two of them are with Baby Cow.
Okay.
And one is with Clark and Will Film. So it's just over two different production companies.
Okay, great. And how do they come about?
So the Clark and Will Films one is, again, directly from the short film. Like, when people ask me, if anyone ever asks me advice, like younger people, I just say, making shorts is so great. It opens up so many doors. It's like you go from someone who's just got a script on their desktop to actually having something that people have seen, and it just changes the conversations that you have. And so the film you're talking about that went to Palm Springs was Whenever You're Ready. And then that got me some meetings with a couple of different production companies. And then Rachel, who is in the film. So the production companies wanted to talk about how it would work as a series. And I was quickly realized that like it wouldn't work with me just writing the whole thing, because this is all from a female perspective of a girl going through something quite traumatic. And so me and Rachel agreed to develop it together. So we met with a few people. We ended up getting it optioned through Clark and Will Films, who were really great and got it. And that was all based off, they saw the short and then asked for a treatment based on the short. So how would you turn this 11-minute film, how do you make this 6 30-minute episodes? What's the arc? What's the character journeys? And what do you do? But I think the short works as a really nice like taster. You get a taste for the tone and the energy of it and how the performances work. And so that is with Clark and Will. And then we just got a script commission just last week from BBC Studios to write the first episode. And so that's
brilliant.
That's
amazing. Cool. I didn't know that. Fantastic. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Are you co-writing that with Rachel as well?
Yeah, we're writing it together.
Yeah.
We're literally doing it this morning over FaceTime because we can't meet up with each other. So it's just working out. You have to write the first episode. But it's such a long process, frustratingly long. But we wrote the treatment a while ago, and we kind of got paid to do that, and then I just didn't hear, so I'd purposely just forgotten about it, and then started writing things. And then the script commission comes around.
How many months after you submitted the treatment did the script commission get the green light?
It might be 6.
Yeah, it takes so long, man. It takes so long.
That long, I don't get it.
It's It's painful. It is painful. But I think, you know, all you can, you use your time wisely. You start developing other projects while you're waiting, don't you? That's all you can do. Yeah. So then you have you're at a point now where you've got various projects at different stages of development.
I think that's what you realize when you see people who suddenly bring out a TV series and then straight away they have another one. It's always probably they had like seven in a queue of a development queue, and once one was successful, the others get the green light. Maybe I guess that's how it works.
So what's going to happen for you next year? Who is this Craig Ainslie guy? He's everywhere. That's what happened with Rob Brydon. He had two shows. I should know the name of them, but
was it with the one? Was it Marion?
Yeah, Marion and Jeff, and the one where there's the different couples is quite dark.
Oh, Human Remains.
Human Remains, yeah. So they, I think they came out like a very similar times, but you know, they must have been in development for ages. But suddenly he's on people's screens in two separate shows.
That's another great example of just like he shot that from the dashboard of his car. It's incredible. And I don't know his story, but I'm guessing that he was a comedian. And you could go away and write a big sitcom and take that script around and try and sell it to people or treat them up. But he went away and just shot something from the dash of his car. And it was so compelling that, like, it's so easy to make. I reckon a production company would be like, we can shoot this for nothing. We might as well.
Yeah.
As well make
it. Yeah, it always makes such a difference, obviously, as long as it comes out the way you want it to, by just shooting something, whether it's just like a scene or... Because otherwise, people are just reading words on a page, which obviously, you know, if the writing's good, that's great. But then if they can watch something and actually see that character live or that situation, it's going to make such a difference.
Yeah. Or if you've never made anything before and they're just reading a script where if they've got your shorts as reference, it's like, oh, I can see what this person would do. They get a lot more tone across in how you would shoot something or perform something.
Yeah. Perfect.
Hello, sorry to interrupt in the middle of this insightful conversation, which I'm enjoying, I'm sure, just as much as you are. But I need to give you guys a little reminder. If you like this conversation, this episode, if you like balancing acts in general, then please do subscribe to us, rate and review us, because it makes the world of difference. And the more reviews we get, the more rates we get, the more people can discover the podcast and we can make it go viral, whatever that means. Okay, back to the chat.
So what are the elements that you find most challenging about writing and directing? Obviously, there is the development stuff, which is a ball ache. Are there any other aspects that you find, particularly challenging or affect you in any way?
Self-doubt, like constantly second-guessing, like, I guess how I work with an idea is if I have an idea, you know, when like your agent sends you on generals where you've got to go and meet someone and just kind of pitch some ideas to a developer. Like, I don't really know how into these ideas I am if I've got to come up with them quickly.
Right.
You know, it's meeting, it's like, oh, I'll throw something together. But sometimes if I have an idea and maybe I pitch it to someone they don't really like it. If I'm still thinking about it like a month later, then I like it. That's me going through a long process with myself. But I learn about it in this kind of gestation period of me being like, oh, I'm still thinking about that.
Yeah.
Maybe that you just have something burning for like, even like close to a year, and then something occurs to you to fix it. Or a slight alteration you can make and be like, oh, it could be this.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like sometimes I find certain characters or a scene for something might get cannibalized by another project you're working on. Oh, actually, no, that's not right for that, but that character could be really good for that project. And then suddenly you just ruthlessly pull him out. He's got no say over the matter. Sorry, mate, you're out. You're going there now. I don't want to be in that world. Tough. That's where you're going.
Yeah, that's true, isn't it? You kind of, you have this like, bottom drawer of ideas that are sticking around that you like, and maybe you've tried them in different projects. Like I'm doing that now with this script commission. I tried to write, I wrote a feature. I sat down and like set myself the task of like, are you going to finish this feature? And I did it last year, and it's like really early drafts, not really ready to show anyone. But now I've got this script commission. There's a whole chunk of my feature that works, that I can think, oh, I can bring this idea into this. So I'm kind of like cannibalizing this feature that I spent ages writing, putting it into this project. And I don't know what that means for all this work I put on my feature. Maybe that's dead now, because it's had
maybe
to
that's
had to sacrifice a limb to be thrown into this thing.
But then it's still
ideas. I don't know.
Or maybe, you know, you were meant to write that so that you could use it for this.
Yeah, you'll always find a way.
You always find something. Like I had a very similar experience recently, like developing an idea. I started going through all my notes systematically for different ideas I'd had over the last sort of 7 years. It took bloody ages. And then every now and then there would be an idea or something, and I thought, oh, that could be used for that. And then I start adding it into this new world that I'm creating. And so it in a way, it's quite satisfying, because you're like, oh, those ideas which literally, you know, went to waste, have been rotting for years, have now they've come to life again, but in a different capacity.
Yeah, totally. Even things that I forgot I came up with years ago, like I read it back and I'm like, was that me that wrote that? It must be, because it's on my desktop. And I'm like, oh, that's actually quite a good idea.
Yeah.
And then I might try and... I remember when I was thinking about writing shorts that were achievable, I just spent a couple of days just like brainstorming concepts that were just one single location.
Well, that's what's so great about whenever you're ready. It's like you...
Yeah, that was one of them, yeah.
Yeah, well, you've got that one location and then just like this amazing monologue. And it was interesting because obviously I don't want to say too much about your latest project, but, and we can cut this out if need be, but when I read the script for the role that you'd asked me to be in for the latest pilot, reading the monologue of the female character, for me, like I could see, oh, that, like, Craig has such a clear style. Like I could see the parallels between the writing in that and then whenever you're ready. And I think that's such a good thing to have, like such a sort of like, yeah, specific style or individual style.
Yeah. I mean, it's either that or me repeating myself, I guess, but,
There were different scenarios, different characters, but there was just also, I know you, so that's something, but it's just sort of, yeah, it's just like, oh yeah, that's nice. This is Craig. This is his shtick.
Yeah. I don't mind talking about that pilot. It's kind of on topic. Again, it was me. I how that one came about.
This is the pilot commissioned for Baby Cow.
Yeah, so it's called Alleyway Chefs.
Yeah.
Am I meant to talk about it? I don't know. Who cares, really? I mean, it's fine. Is it? I guess.
this sounds like one of your monologues.
Well, anyway, I think, like, I know I keep banging on about this thing about writing things that I could make. I had, like, so last year I had like two things in development that just, you get paid to write the treatment and then they disappear into development. And then you just like, occasionally you might hear back, and it'll just be a note saying, oh, Channel 4 passed or Sky have passed or something like that. So you'll just get like a little bit of bad news out of the blue on like a average Wednesday afternoon.
And that's after how long of submitting it?
I don't know. A month here, a month there. Like right, you just, okay. You know that the production company believe in it, and the developers of Baby Cow are really great, as are the ones at Clark and Well, like, you just really align with their taste, so you trust them, they go off and do it. But as the kind of writer creator, you're just left waiting. And so rather than wait, I thought, could I shoot a series myself? I mean, obviously, it's a big ask. So I wrote this new thing, which is called Alleyway Chefs, which again is all essentially set in one location. And then I got it to a point where I was like, oh, I know I could make this. That would be the first episode. And then once I had that, I just took it around a couple of places and, you know, and ended up talking to Baby Cow about it. And it became another thing in development that we shot through Baby Cow and became this pilot that you were in last week and 2 weeks ago. And again, to my point, it was just born out of like, how can I film something myself? I'm always like, I get super frustrated with how long things take, that I try and take control of it myself. So it's like, well, I've got no control over BBC Studios paying for this to turn into a pilot, but if I write something contained enough that I know I can get a crew together to shoot myself, then the control's in my hands. And that's why I wrote Alleyway Chefs whilst waiting for the other things in development. And weirdly, that's the one that we've ended up shooting first. I don't know what my point is.
Writing things that, you know, are achievable to shoot independently, so that, you know, even if you hadn't of got the interest or the commission from Baby Cow, you could have essentially shot that on your own.
Yeah, I was going to do it anyway.
When you're going to do it anyway. Yeah.
When I showed it to people, it was always like, I'm going to shoot this, unless you're interested to help out.
I think it's great that you, despite, you know, getting these commissions, you know, you could just, there's an argument you said, well, you should just now focus on just doing long form projects only. But it's great that you've also kept up doing shorts and short form content as well. Because the thing is, like, if you just rely on the long form projects to eventually come to fruition, then you're not going to be on set for like years. Do you know what I mean? You're waiting, it's like, oh yeah, I might just get a commission. I could be directing this in 3 years.
Yeah. Especially if you're a writer performer and you write yourself into something. I mean, I'm not a performer, but I imagine maybe for you or the writer performers is you write yourself into a character and then years pass and you're like, am I like still young enough to play this person?
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine that being an issue depending on what sort of character or an age they're going for. I think I could just, 25 years old or 30 years old, you've got a baby face. I think I could get away with playing this teenage character.
Yeah, just still trying to pull it off.
3 years, the silver hairs are starting to show.
Yeah, it's fine.
I just diet. Okay, great. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to ask you or cover over the filmmaking. Have you got like an ultimate goal of where you want your career to be heading? Or have you got sort of like, is there anyone, you know, that you aspire towards now? Oh, yeah, that's the kind of career that I would love.
Oh my God. I think really the truthful answer is just, it'd be great to be able to spend 100% of my time doing this, just writing, directing my own TV shows, yeah, or films as well. If I could make my living doing that, that'd be a cool place to settle.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's quite a boring answer, isn't it?
I didn't have any expectations for the answer. So
you know, I mean, the nature of your the show is called Balancing Acts, and I don't know, just my immediate friends who do the same thing as me, it is that constant struggle, which is why it's a good topic for a podcast, is people are trying to kind of fund their passions, you know, whether you've got to do something you're not really into to fund the film that you want to make, or you've got to, like, you go away and you shoot an advert and then that gives you some money to shoot your short film or something. Like, loads of creative people are just trying to strike that balance of like shooting, making things that they really feel passionate about and doing things which gives them money. But if those two things can collide, I think that's like the perfect world.
That's the ultimate, isn't it? Yeah, I had the same thing. Sorry?
Where passion and money collide.
Great name for your future self-help book.
That's coming out soon.
Yep. I had the same thing. For me, was producing. You know, producing. Like, I was fortunate in terms of like it was common. It started off music videos, but then I started to veer off to do comedy branded content. So I was fortunate in terms of it was in that area, but it was still producing. And I wanted to move away from producing to doing more, you know, the writing and directing side of things. But it enabled me to finance stuff like Swiped and other projects.
Yeah.
So exactly. It's just, yeah, you've got to
give you skill. You're like a force of nature. You can produce, write, direct and act in something. So you're like self-sufficient straight away. The stuff you were producing in order to make money do your own things, it was just building muscle that you could use in your own stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, there is that. I think also, there's also an argument to be said though, that is it better just to focus on one thing? So for instance, you're just focusing on writing and directing. That's your thing. And whether that means you progress quicker than somebody who is deciding due to their sort of, call it megalomania, deciding to do spinning four plates at once. It means that they might not master, obviously you never master becoming like a writer, director, you're always learning something new. That's one of the great things about it. But whether, yeah, your projection would be quicker if you were just focusing on sort of like maybe one or two elements as opposed to, I guess the classic thing I've talked about, this again, this popped up in the last conversation, the one before, because I was speaking to people like that, the multi-hyphenates, you heard of that?
Yeah.
Like ever since like Fleabag came out, you know, we were looking for the next Phoebe Waller-Bridge. He's a multi-hyphenate. I've got to stop using that accent. I did the same example last episode and I did the same character. We're looking for a multi-hyphenate, mate. He's looking for an act.
Well, all of these like Cockney developers looking for multi-hyphenate.
Yeah, well, you know, they're out there, mate. There's tons of Cockney developers, isn't there? You know, flogging formats, flogging shows on the corner, street corner, markets. Get your formats, mate. Get your formats. Buy one, get one free. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. She's great. But there's more than just her, you know. Like, I think people see something successful.
Of course, yeah.
And then they just try and replicate it. I worked with her. She's the in one of my animated shorts. She's the voice of one of the animated things. And it was weird afterwards that the people that would get in touch with me thinking that I was like a contact to her, like Americans, like people in LA. So are you and Phoebe doing something again? It's like, you're not going to get, I don't really know. I met like a couple of hours. But yeah, well, you're a multi-hyphenate, I think, aren't you?
I guess I could be termed as that.
How many hyphens are you rocking?
How many what?
How many hyphens you got going on?
I got a, on a rainy day, I've got about four hyphens going on.
Four hyphens.
Yeah, I guess it depends what you consider.
Whatever works though. I think you can always feel like you're juggling too much and you don't know what you should focus on. It's just if it feels right, you know, like if you can write something for yourself, then why not?
Yeah.
You can write yourself really well. You know yourself. I mean, if I felt I was an effective actor, I would maybe do it. Although it's probably stressful on set. I don't know. I mean, you've done it. I don't know how you direct yourself.
I actually find it relatively easy because I'll know straight away if it was a good take or not. Because I just know if I've done a shit, I just know if like, I know that was shit. Mm-hmm. And I can talk to myself and like in a very, like honest way, you know, sort of internally, because I know that was shit. Let's do another one. But, and then if I've got it, I'll know I've got it. What?
Give yourself some notes between takes.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And all the crew are like, what's going on with Steve? Just talking to himself in the corner. That was good, mate. I just want a little bit more. I want a bit more grounded. Okay. Yeah, no problem. Yeah. So I don't know, but each time, what I did find really challenging was when I was making these comedy rap music videos and I'd be directing them, producing them, and then also be the rapper. And I remember, like, I did one video, it was just, I had all these extras and I'm like directing, I had no AD or anything like that. And I'm directing the extras where to go, bam, bam, bam. And then turn into camera, do a take, rapping in character as this 80-year-old man. It was the song's called like The Life of a Geriatric. And then, and then speaking to the runner, go, right, can we order pizza in 45 minutes for lunch for everyone? That was just, that was too much.
That's incredible, though. I would just fall apart under that amount of pressure.
Yeah, I mean, it's deluded. Well, there's something deluded. You have to be, I think you have to be quite deluded to get yourself in that situation and not necessarily question it. You know, you go, yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine. Even the makeup artist on that, I knew her, but even her, she turned around and goes, Steve, you've got to start getting yourself a producer.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say you were doing the makeup as well. Did you edit that one as well?
No, I didn't edit it. I didn't edit it. That's generally my rule of thumb. I like to work with an editor. For me, it makes, I don't know about you, but just having that point of view there is just so valuable.
Yeah, I have the same editor for each one.
Oh, do you? Mm. So, I mean, that's an interesting point. And do you find that you work with the same team or crew for each production, or do you like to mix it up?
Yeah, I try to. Yeah, if they're available, or if they want to do another project with me, my editor's been the same each time, and that's always good because he will like challenge me, just like brutally like sever out a whole chunk that I was hanging on to, and it's like, wow, I've got to look at it from this new angle. And
will you have conversations with him before the shoot in terms of planning the edit?
I do my own storyboard, really terribly drawn storyboard, and then I send that to him. And he might even feedback on the storyboard, which is kind of handy as well. And then we just talk about it. Then I go in and he will like test me, take things out and say, do you need this? And I think it's ultimately it's about taste. He's got, I like his taste. And so
that's a big thing, isn't it? If you can connect with someone over taste, you share the same taste, then that's a great starting point.
Yeah, especially with things like Whenever You're Ready was a bit like a weird long monologue with editing wise, I suppose it's, you know, not hugely interesting, but he found a way to cut that up and you know, he got it. He wasn't, you know, when you deliver the final thing to him and he watches it again, I just have this feeling like he might watch this and be like, what the fuck am I editing here? What is this? But he doesn't do that. Well, not to my face. So I like it.
I look for self-assurance from from the crew. So if I do a scene, there's a scene, I look, and I think it's, you know, potentially a funny scene. I look to see if any of the crew are laughing. And sometimes if they're not, like, that will affect me sometimes. Not that much, but like, I'm like, is it funny? Maybe it's not
funny. Yeah, me too. And if they did laugh, it would ruin the scene.
Yeah. But
I'd be quite happy.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then you learn about it afterwards by watching it. So I remember the first few festivals when you see it at a big screen, it starts and you're sat in the audience and I just feel myself like shrinking in my seat. As it's starting, it's been like, oh God, how's this going to go over? But then you learn about the film by watching it with audiences. Like the laughs come at the same pits all the time. There might be a few oddities, but usually you can rely on like, oh, that cut always gets a laugh. Wow, okay. And I know that cut's coming up so that I can start feeling a bit more at ease. I didn't enjoy the screenings at first, but by the end, I was kind of comfortable with them.
Yeah, I found it quite stressful. I did, for Swiped, I did one screening. I did one evening where I did four screenings in one evening. One for industry people. I did one for, I think I did two lots of industry people, one for friends and family, and then one for all the cast and crew. And yeah, you're just sort of like very aware of where, I'm always aware. It's like the, you know, typical point of view from a comedian, you kind of hone in on the one person that isn't laughing. Sort of like you're aware of the moments or where there are no laughter, rather than focusing on the bits where you're getting loads of laughter.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's brutal. It's total exposure. You've just gathered these people in this room to watch a thing that you made. And that's it. You've just got to hit play and pray.
And this awkward moment for the industry one where after the screening had finished, film ended, and then I went to open the door to like just pull it open so that people could walk out. But then somehow I ended up just getting stuck there because the first person that walked out shook my hand, and then everyone else that followed suit thought they should also shake my hand. And it was the most awkward thing where I was like shaking hands with everyone. I was like, start to like perspire. And I was like, this isn't what I planned. This is what's going on here. I just want to get out.
So, and people thought you'd position yourself there, especially for the handshake.
Yeah, that was the worst thing about it. The most egotistical move ever. Come on, shake my hand.
You cannot exit until you've shaken my hand.
Yeah.
It's also a coronavirus nightmare as well. You at the door just touching everyone's hand.
Yeah. What do you do outside of filmmaking to relax and unwind?
Well.
In writing, sorry.
I'm failing your dad. So I have a 2-year-old daughter.
Yes, this was actually something I want to talk to you about.
We're in danger of her gate crashing this podcast at any minute.
Bring her in.
All the nurseries are closed and she is, nap time could end at any minute, basically. So a lot of my time is spent dadding, looking after her.
How do you find that balance between being a dad and you and sort of, you know, doing your career stuff?
Yeah, that was massive change in my life. It worked in a couple of ways, which was I went from just being like someone without a kid to a dad, and just the amount of time it takes up was completely surprising to me. Maybe I was naive to think that I'd have more time, but it was also quite motivating somehow. I think she was like 4 months old when I shot Whenever You're Ready. So after she was born, I quite quickly realized that I only now have short windows of time where I can work. And maybe that's like still my day job or like a few hours here and there. Like it stopped me wasting time or procrastinating so much. So I wrote and cast and filmed that short all within like the first 4 months of her life somehow. I can't actually looking back.
That's incredible.
But it lit a fire under me a little bit because I was like, oh, I don't want to have to stop now. I want to be able to continue. And then like learning to be a father at the same time, which is just an ongoing kind of lesson. And so this thing of like, I hate not like being absent. Like, so if I'm with her and I know I've got work to do, it's really frustrating for me to like not be present with her. So I just try and like, well, while I'm with her, that's all I'm doing.
Yeah.
You try and do two things with a kid, you're just making your life so stressful. You just need to like be there for her. If she wants to suddenly spend like half an hour pointing at a worm and talking about it, that's all you're doing in that time. And then when you get like a couple of hours later on to work, then I would just work. I just started like working on stuff. And it was like about like, okay, what am I going to do? Which things are going to get made? What do I want to achieve with this script? It focused me somehow. I mean, that's not me all the time, but in that first kind of half a year of her life, it focused me.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, because I guess you can go either way with it, couldn't you? It could absorb you and be time consuming. All right, I'm just going to focus on work and being a dad, as in like your advertising career to bring in the bacon.
Yeah,
I mean, I've got to bring in the bacon.
I'm bringing home a little bit of bacon.
Yeah.
I remember like years ago, I watched, I can't remember what it's called, The Making of Apocalypse Now.
Okay.
It's got a great title. It's escaped me for some reason.
I heard about it from somewhere. I can't
remember. Look up the title. It's good.
I'm going to put this down as a... another thing to watch.
Hearts of Darkness. So,
okay.
I watched Hearts of Darkness before we had Winnie, my daughter. And basically during that shoot for Apocalypse Now, which was just a fucking nightmare, everything was going wrong. And Francis Ford Coppola's wife was filming. And obviously, famously, the story of Apocalypse Now was they went way over time and budget, and the whole crew was just in this jungle being eaten alive by mosquitoes. Martin Sheen had like a heart attack, like one of the cast members had a heart attack and had to go off set and come on set, and there was so much shit going wrong. And in the film, like, people start losing their minds and hallucinating, and it was kind of meta because the crew were doing that as well. And in Hearts of Darkness, there's just this amazing footage of, like, they're like weeks over on their production and out of money, so Coppola's funding it himself. And there's just this scene of him, he's living on a houseboat, and he's sat in just pants at a typewriter rewriting the ending of the film. Like, he's on location, like on set almost, rewriting the ending of this film. And he's got two little kids just running around him like chaos. And I always remember thinking, like, wow, yeah, you can do it. And I mean, God knows how he pulled that off in the end, but there was just this, like, the stress and pressure that he must have been feeling at that moment, his own money, the ending doesn't work, you have to rewrite it, and you've got two kids just like clattering pans together and running around you. And that image just stuck in my head. Occasionally I think of it as a dad. Not that I would compare myself to Coppola, but there's just this thing of multitasking and how things don't have to stop because of responsibilities, and you can just try and kind of make them live together.
Yeah, you just try and make it work. It's like some beautiful mess, and just figure it out as you go along.
Embrace that mess. And like, there have been so many times where, like, early on in fatherhood, where you're up at like 3, you may be awake from like 2 till 4 in the morning, and you're just trying to get them back to sleep, and or they just sat on your lap, and it's just this quiet time. And like, actually, that is, you're not really doing much parenting there. You're just holding your baby and trying to get them to sleep. And you might solve creative problems in the middle of the night. Occasionally it happens. You're usually just pissed off because you're so fucking exhausted. But I've definitely had time to think, time to make notes, and just in those weird, quiet, twilight moments where, I don't know, you might have just like, your kid will wake you from a deep sleep or a dream at 2 a.m. and then you're thrown into this scenario where you're kind of in the kitchen making some milk and your mind's still kind of lucidly dreaming. And I mean, it's not the ideal way to write or to brainstorm, but I try and like use those moments as well.
Yeah, that's great. I was thinking the other day, I watched the film Happy People with Adam Sandler. It was it's a Judd Apatow film. What did I say? Happy People. Funny People. I'm getting confused with Happy Gilmore. Just put the two together. Funny People, yeah. And Judd Apatow's wife, Leslie Mann, is in it, and his daughters as well. And, you know, at that point, I think his youngest maybe have been about 7 or something. I wonder, imagine what that experience must be like, where you're directing your wife and two kids. Not in like a short film or anything, like in this, you know, Hollywood film. Like,
oh God, yeah. I don't know. It's like
such a unique experience.
Parenting and directing at the same time. That's the ultimate kind of chaotic moment.
But then kind of cool because he's bringing them along for the ride.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, that's the main balancing act for me now, is okay. Parenting and writing at the same time. But then it does change you and opens you up to like new ways of thinking and realizations and different insights. And actually, one of the projects I have in development, not the thing that I shot with you, but the other show that's with Baby Cow, is hugely inspired by that first year of parenting.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a whole story arc of a father with a baby.
Write about what you know. That's done. It, yeah. All right, man. Well, look, thank you so much for this conversation. I usually wrap things up by asking guests on the podcast what the idea of balance means to them or not, but I kind of feel like you kind of pretty much answered that to a certain degree, just in terms of where you're currently at with balancing your being a dad and a writer director. But if you want to add anything, obviously, yeah, go ahead.
I started meditating after, I think, becoming around about the same time as coming down. I started a daily guided meditation, just 10 minutes a day, and that's been really helpful for the balance as well, just to give myself a sense of patience and not let my frustrations take over my mood too much, because it is incredibly frustrating trying to get things off the ground and how long it takes. I don't even know if that answers the question. I always find that the way to get rid of frustration in like with creativity is just start working on something. As soon as you start working on something, you feel a little bit better, because you can just feel paralyzed by like, which one should I be working on? But just start writing something.
Just go ahead and do it. Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Even if it's like an idea, if I don't have an idea for a show, just start. I will just like write two people a coffee table and just start writing the dialogue of two people talking and see what comes out. It's like doing some stretches or something before going for a run, or like it just kind of something. You're doing something and it feels better than nothing.
Great. All right, man. Thanks so much. I know you're in the shed, and is it sunny there where you are? Is it a hot sunny day?
It's just come out. Literally just a second before you said that, it came really? Out.
Okay. Well, maybe it's your time now to be released from the shed and go out to get some vitamin D. That was really good, man. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you. Perfect.
And there we have it. Craig Ainslie in the building, or in the shed, actually. Lovely conversation. Hope you enjoyed that one, guys. And lockdown is going swimmingly for you. I've started to get into the rhythm of this thing now. And starting to enjoy myself. Really, really rocking the recipe thing right now. Tonight I cooked myself a sweet potato green curry, and it was rather nice. And I watched the first two episodes of The Last Dance, the Netflix documentary series on the last, I think it's Jordan's last season at Chicago Bulls, and I'm loving it. Devour the first two episodes in one night, but still not binging, which is good. Doing the old exercise, the meditation. Just got my routine on lockdown, no pun intended. So yeah, I hope you enjoyed the episode, guys. As always, please do rate, review, subscribe, all that jazz. It really does help get the podcast out there. And tune in to next week's episode, where I will be joined by the very funny and deep, wise and intelligent Carl Donnelly. Until then, have a good one.
Balancing Acts is now made in association with The Comedy Crowd, who are a website and community that support independent comedy creators such as myself. I have a Comedy Crowd short, which is a 2-minute video, one of my characters on their website. They showcase the best new videos on Comedy Crowd TV, which is comedycrowdtv.com, and across media platforms. So do go and check them out.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership.
Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.